and not fouled. Flagler across midcourt. Harris poking at the ball. And they let the last 6 seconds run off the clock. Baylor wins it 75-69. The Jayhawks, with still four monster games in front of them, have lost three in a row for just the fourth time in the Self era.
I'm proud of our guys. I thought we fought hard. We didn't have much going at all, but we hung in there. And, of course, Grady had a good offensive game, and Jalen had a good offensive game. And so that kept us in the game offensively. And then defensively, the first half, we couldn't guard the ball at all. And then, you know, of course, they shot lights out. And, you know, it's one thing. They made seven threes the first half, but three of them were, I mean, we probably couldn't defend them much better. Four of them they probably, you know, deserved to make. And that was the difference in the first half, was their ability to shoot the ball. And then in the second half, you know, they're a great free throw shooting team. That's part of our deal. And it got to 11-2 on team fouls, and we're just giving them free points, you know, and we weren't able to really overcome that.
So the KU men's basketball team falling from second to ninth in the rankings that came out yesterday, and they will fall further in the rankings. And Kentucky is on the horizon, and Kentucky, a team that has struggled but played better as of late. And they have Oscar Tshiebwe, who was the National Player of the Year last year. Don't know how KU matches up with Big Bag Oscar at Kentucky. That's coming up on Saturday night, which you can hear on Z96.3 The Lake. So a daunting schedule ahead for KU. And just a fourth time under Bill Self, the KU has lost three in a row as they lose number 17 Baylor on the road at Waco last night, 75-69. Looked like they were going to be run out of the gym. And battled all the way back and took the lead briefly. And then Baylor took control again and go on to win it by six. Grady Dick with 24 as he learned how to put the ball on the floor and drive it to make the defense honest. Coach Self had told him to do that at halftime, and he did a good job of driving to the hoop. He had 24. Jalen Wilson, another outstanding game, 23. Jalen Wilson, last three games, 38, 30, and 23 in all losses. So wasted a great stretch of Jalen Wilson's career in regards to those three games. However, that's because he has to shoulder so much of the load. KU now 16-4 on the season, 5-3 in the Big 12. Baylor at LJ Cryer with 22 is red hot in the first half, as Bill Self alluded to. Baylor now has won five in a row in the conference. They're 15-5, and they have maybe the best three guards in America combined together, the best trio of guards in America, and they looked pretty good last night. And just goes to show that K-State caught Baylor probably at a good time early in the conference season, winning in overtime down there. And that's part of winning conference titles, catching teams at the right time. Maybe you catch them early in the year, maybe catch them late in the year when they have some injuries or something like that. And for me, the biggest concern for Kansas is the same concern I've had all year long, and that is who's going to score. Because after, I mean, last night, Jalen Wilson scored 23, Grady Dick 24. They did their part. But somebody else is going to have to score. Kansas is not going to be able to hold teams of 60 points or less. So Kevin McCullough played better last night. He had really been in a funk. He was in double figures. He had a double-double. But no 2 points from the bench, so they're getting nothing offensively from the bench. And the thing that they've been able to do when they got off to that great start is, and win close games, was KJ Adams was scoring 10, 14, 22. KJ's struggling now. Last couple games, he's missed some shots he had been making. And if KJ's not scoring, that puts even more of the load on Jalen Wilson, Grady Dick, and DeJuan Harris doesn't even look to shoot half the time. And granted, he's a prototypical old-school point guard trying to set up his teammates, but there are times he's open and he passes up on those shots, and teams just lay off of him. And even in the lane last night, I saw he had a 10-foot turnaround. If he just, boom, he's right there, and he kicks out to Grady Dick, who made the three, so you can't be mad at the play. They got three out of it. But he passed up a 10-foot shot for a 21-foot shot. You know, the percentages are better that you shoot that shot in the lane. So KU's got issues, but let's not freak out about it. I mean, last year at this time, did anybody think KU was going to win the national title? KU was struggling about this time last year. They had a late loss to TCU, almost lost to TCU twice in 3 days. What's wrong with Kansas? They're tired. They don't have much of a bench. Their starters play too many minutes. Too much is on Christian Brown and Obagi. You know, other guys got to score. McCormick's got to step up, and then he did. He did. McCormick, second half of last year, stepped up, and you like to have another extra year of eligibility for David McCormick. Who would have thought that 3 years ago? But if you had David McCormick on this team is way different and probably in better shape. So I think the biggest concern between last year and this year is I think last year's team was a better team than this year's team, no doubt, offensively. But it's because you don't have a true low post threat. And now I don't know how you match up against Kentucky and Oscar Tshiebwe. I mean, you maybe you can get up and down, run the floor, and you break Oscar away from the bucket. Maybe that's beneficial for you offensively, but I don't know how the KU defends Oscar Tshiebwe unless they pack it in on him, and then Kentucky, you know, depend on hitting outside shots. So Kentucky is, I know they're not ranked, I know they're on the bubble right now, but they're playing a lot better basketball the last couple games. They beat number 5 Tennessee about a week and a half ago. KU lost to Tennessee by 14 in the Bahamas. So Kansas has a tough schedule ahead, as does basically anybody in the Big 12. But let's not freak out that Kansas is in trouble or done. But I do think there's reason to be concerned offensively, which has been a concern there all year long. So this is nothing new going into last night. And then defensively, they weren't bad, but they got beat in some key moments with offensive rebounds, which is, once again, a lack of the post play, the lack of a big inside. Not only hurts you offensively, but they don't have a shot blocker to erase anything at the rim that they once had, although they didn't really have it much last year. But at least had a 6'10 guy that could block a shot from now and then. So not having a true five is starting to catch up to Kansas, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of the game last night because I was working on other stuff, but it didn't look good at those times. Like it does, just like it feels like in these kind of games that Grady Dick and Jalen Wilson are just having to take over and just do way too much.
Yeah.
And that's not a recipe for any team.
No.
To have just two guys have to shoulder all the offensive load. And it is nice when you can get KJ to step up and play good offensively. And that obviously in turn leads to you starting off very well in conference play when he can do that. And DeJuan Harris starts getting a little confidence in his shot. And, you know, you saw some of that happen earlier in conference play, you know, and then it goes away. It's not consistent, basically,
right,
is what you're going to probably be looking at from those guys the rest of the year. I mean, I don't think those guys are people that are just going to step up and do this. Like, even if they get hot for a stretch, it's not something that stays. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe one of those guys can get hot and stay hot like a David McCormick did maybe last year. But it's just not something you can rely on if you're KU. And so now you've got to try to have at least one of those guys on. And if they're not, then, like you said, it's going to be a long year, and or not a long year, but a long year for KU, right? Like, they're not going to be where people want them to be at the end, right, which is at the top of everything. Now, again, it all comes down to matchups and everything like that once you get to that point. But I wouldn't feel great right now as a KU fan that somebody else is going to step up and do this consistently until I actually see it.
And expectations. I mean, we talked about it yesterday.
Absolutely.
I mean, KU fans didn't, I mean, let's be honest, KU fans, if you're listening right now, did you think after winning the title last year and then looking at who was coming in, and granted, talent, Grady Dick, MJ Rice, who doesn't play very much, you know, Uday, they thought was going to be a good player. He doesn't even get off the bench. He sits on the pine all the time. Zuby kid hasn't done a lot this year. You know, the young guys haven't done a lot other than Grady Dick. Yosefu hasn't really taken a step forward offensively for this team coming off the bench. And, I mean, you had no true post. I don't think there's a lot of KU fans that I know that would have told you, yeah, we're going to be a national championship, legitimate national championship contender. We're going to take a step back this year. We could make a run, no doubt. Can we win the Big 12? Possibly. But we're not going to be as good as we were last year. And then they get off to the great start, and then they win all these close games, which I think was fool's gold because they were winning at home and barely winning. And they should have lost Oklahoma State. They should have lost to Oklahoma. TCU, they did get blown out. And so, you know, when you can't win every single close game, and they were. Then they lost at K-State, and that was a great game, and both teams played well in that one. And then you got to turn around, you get blown out by TCU, which is not a good matchup for KU. It's just not for KU. It wasn't for K-State either in Fort Worth. And then they go to Baylor, and that's a tough place to play. Everybody knows that. And Baylor's always got KU marked and circled in a whiteout because that's their Super Bowl in Waco, usually. That's become a bit of a rivalry a little bit. And so you're going to get everybody's best shot. You're the defending national champion, even though you don't have the same pieces coming back from last year. Obagi and Brown are in the NBA. McCormick's overseas. Those are your three best players from last year. So I don't think the expectations were Kansas going to go to the Final Four this year, if people are being honest with themselves. But when you start 16-1 and you're 5-0 in the Big 12, even though you're barely getting by, you go, And I even said it back then. I said, if KU plays like they've been playing and KJ Adams plays like he's been playing, Kansas is a national championship contender, and they're definitely a one seed, and they definitely can win the Big 12. You win the Big 12, you're a number one seed, and that means you're a national championship contender. But at the same time, it's also an indictment of college basketball in itself, because I don't think KU is as good as last year. I don't think this KU team is as good as a lot of teams in the past that didn't start 16-1. And it's the same thing applies to Kansas State. We've talked about it. Kansas State beat KU. Well, the national championship contender? Well, yeah, they are. They're number five in the country now. They're atop the Big 12 standings. Even if they lose tonight in Ames, doesn't mean they're not a national championship contender. But I think in a normal year, KU and K-State would be second tier, maybe fringe national champion contender. But with this year's college basketball landscape, Kansas gets back on the right track. KJ Adams plays better again. McCullough refines himself after a couple bad games. Yeah, Kansas can be a national championship contender again, not as they're playing now. And also K-State can be too. So it's a wide open field. I mean, Connecticut got the number two and lost five out of six. Okay. Houston, both times they got number one, immediately got lost. In this last game, they lost at home to Temple. Okay. Purdue got the number one, lost immediately. Duke's not rated in the top 25 and lost to a 1-7 Virginia Tech team in conference. Virginia Tech lost seven in a row. Duke lost at Virginia Tech last night. North Carolina was ranked number one with all their studs coming back. They're not even ranked right now. Kentucky, all the talent in the world, and we're going to see it Saturday, they're not even ranked. They're on the bubble. I mean, so even if you lose three in a row in the Big 12, if there's ever a conference to lose three in a row in, it's the Big 12 and still be okay because of how tough this league is. And so that's why don't write off KU. And we were sitting here in January last year wondering about KU and some of the issues that they had. We were talking about the same things. Why isn't McCormick stepping up? He should be doing more. He needs to do more if this team's going to go anywhere. And what do you know? He hit two of the biggest shots in the national championship game to help KU win the game. And as somebody tweeted here, January is always bad. January is always bad. January is always bad. Bill Self's our coach. Bill Self's our coach. Bill Self's our coach. We won the Natty. We won the Natty. We won the Natty. Reinforcing the emotions of a KU fan going, remember, it's January. It's not March. It's not even February. There's no reason to panic. And if you're a KU fan, I don't think you should be panicking, but I think you should be concerned because of the concern that's been there all along that we've spotted out, and that is, where do you get your offense, especially if you're in a half court? Because they don't get tons of easy buckets. Their easiest buckets they get is Jalen Wilson driving to the hoop. That's the easiest buckets they get. Now, Grady Dick driving the hoop, maybe they're going to get more buckets that way. McCullough doesn't get a ton of easy buckets. KJ, gets a few alley-oops every once in a while. They just don't get easy buckets. And part of that is not having a true five. The other part of it is that I think teams have been doing a better job of getting back defensively against Kansas in transition. And if you don't get a defensive rebound, it's hard to get out in transition.
I think one of the things that people need to remember about, too, is like you said, KU's not getting up much from their bench, right?
Yeah.
We can never understate the spark that Remy Martin gave KU last year. And nobody like that's coming from KU this year.
Yeah, they got nobody
coming out of nowhere
come off an injury.
Come off the bench and just be that spark for you and come off of, like you said, off the injury and then just change the dynamic of what the team is. That's not there this year.
No.
And I think some people might overlook that part as we get further and further away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a very, very, very important part of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's the reason that I said KU was going to roll through after the second week or the second round and win the title last year was because of the spark that he brought. And I don't think anybody should understate that. And if you don't have something coming off your bench that can be consistent too, that's going to be an issue as well, right?
Well, January of last year, we were talking about Brown's doing his part, Obagi too much on those two guys.
Yeah.
McCormick isn't doing enough. And Remy, when's he going to play? Because he's hurt.
Yeah.
But like you said, unless MJ Rice is going to turn into a really good player here and start to play more, there's really no offensive threat coming off the bench. That's an instant offense. There is nobody. Yasufu, I don't think, is that instant offense guy. And I mean, they just don't get nothing from the bench. So maybe MJ Rice will turn into that. But Remy Martin is an experienced Pac-12 player of the year guy.
Yeah,
exactly. MJ Rice is a freshman who was in a tough environment last night. They put him in for a spark. He got, I think, maybe he got a putback basket. Then he had a travel and he got blown by I think it was Cryer on the dribble, right off the drive, got boom, easy to the bucket, and he had to foul him. So MJ Rice, I don't think, is ready prime time right now. And a lot of these McDonald All-Americans KU has, they're not ready for this conference right now, except for Grady Dick. And that's the thing. You lose some studs like Brown and Obagi and McCormick and Remy Martin, too. You're replacing them with who? Grady Dick. You replace McCullers, one of them, but you really aren't replacing the big guy, obviously, and that's David McCormick. So I think Kansas will be fine. There's ebbs and flows to every season. You know, K-State's going to have a stretch where they're going to lose probably two out of three because this conference is so good. The other thing about K-State is David Gasson's coming back, and that's a big that they haven't had. So K-State actually has a guy that could really help them more, like KU kind of had, right. Except he's not nearly as experienced as Remy Martin.
No.
And he's a bigger kid, obviously, and Mary Emery is a point guard. He's about 5'11". So very interested to see what KU does from here. But all I know is if you got Bill Self as your head coach, you still got a lot of talent on that team. It's January. We were talking about some of the same stuff last year, and they end up doing just fine. Local sports, then we'll get to K-State and their game tonight, and the Royals make a trade, and the Chiefs are officially now an underdog, as I said they should have been all along. All right, Mid-Continent League tournament wrapping up last night.
Yeah, the Lady Red Smith Center picking up a win as the girls finished third place, a 43-42 win over Ellis there in Waukini, and then the boys picked up their second straight win, beating Plainville 45-33 in Stockton to finish ninth place, so two straight there for the Smith Center boys. As far as the titles, Phillipsburg girls took first place, a 61-39 domination of Hoxie. TMP beat Hill City 51-49. Kate Harris had a three that he tried to float in, missed it right off the backboard, rebound went right back to him, and he laid it in at the buzzer for the win. 51-49 TMP over Hill City.
Maybe he did that on purpose.
He may have.
Caught your own missed shot.
He could have, but it didn't look like it. It looked like he was actually going to try to make the three, but it came out the wrong way on a floater.
And it worked out, though.
Ended up perfect for him, though.
Balled his shot and got it.
TMP ended up with the win, 51-49, again over Hill City there. Full brackets for the Mid-Continent League tournament are at ncksports.com.
Speaking of TMP, did you see Grant Stevenson's going to be a new head coach at TMP?
Yep, he's going to teach and be the head coach for the TMP football team. Yep, and that's a great hire, obviously, for TMP.
For people listening, give a little background for Grant.
Grant was an assistant coach at St. John's Tipton under Keith Kersine there. It's been a while now. I can't remember the year that it was, but he was at Tipton, or the years. I know like Luke Eilert, Riley Gates, Connor Eilert, those guys were playing at the time that he was there. He's a Little River graduate and originally, and actually coached a little bit at TCU as a grad assistant. So he's been around and came back to Kansas, wanted to be back at the small school, and from St. John's Tipton went to Plainville for 4 or 5 years, and now he's at TMP. So, yeah, he's definitely – people from the area probably know him. He's married to Lindsay Pacey from the area, from Beloit as well. So, and they're they were living in Plainville, but I don't know if they'll stay there or move to Hayes or whatever they're doing. But Grant's got a great pedigree of coaching here, especially here in North Central Kansas. So, that's great hire for TMP.
Good luck to him, except when they play teams from our area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, Grant Stevenson, new football coach there at TMP. High school sports tonight. We do a reminder, high school wrestling locker room chat's coming up at 5:15 tonight. We'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center. If you missed those, you can always check them out online as well, katycountry94.com. High school basketball tonight on Katy Country 94. It's Lincoln at Lakeside. We'll have pregame for the girls at 5:50 and tip off at 6 o'clock. The boys' game will follow here this evening. Lincoln's 4-7 and 1-4 in the league in both the girls and boys. Lakeside girls are 9-4 and 4-0. Coming into the night, while the Lincoln Lakeside boys just fell under 500 at 6-7, 2-2. They did beat Lincoln by 20 in the play-in game of the MPL tournament on January 13th, the first time the two teams played. I would say that Lakeside definitely the favorite in both of these games tonight. Again, we'll have those on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com here this evening. Then on Z96.3 Through the Lake, Beloit and Sacred Heart playing in Solana tonight in NCAA League play. I'm sure Wade will have more on those. Just real quick, want to go over the other schedules. Games on the schedule tonight: Osborne hosting Wilson, Thunder Ridge at Pike Valley, Rock Hills hosting Tescott, Southern Cloud at Sylvan Lucas, St. John's Tipton's at Bennington, and in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center's hosting Hill City. Again, the full schedule for the MPL, NCAA, ncksports.com. Beloit, again, at Sacred Heart tonight on the Beloit Trojan Channel, and Z96.3 Through the Lake with pregame at 5:50.
Yeah, the girls' game opportunity for Beloit girls, although having played just three games in 3 days, Sacred Heart hasn't played in 11 days. Sacred Heart used to be in midseason tournaments. They'd be in SIT. They're in the, I think it was a Bennington or Elsaline tournament where they whipped up on everybody. Now they don't even play in a tournament. They have all this time off between games, which is really weird in January while everybody else is midseason tournaments. That would drive me nuts as a coach. And so they're going to be well rested. They might be a little rusty. They're going to be at home and both the girls and boys of Sacred Heart have struggled on their home floor. But the girls' game, Shauna Remus, her team, dealing with a little sickness, dealing with some ankle sprains with a couple of their post players. On Shauna Remus on what's coming up.
The next few games are pretty important in terms of our league, but also they're teams we can compete with, and so that's going to be fun for our kids to, you know, play teams that are not Hayes High caliber.
Yeah, Sacred Heart's not Hayes High caliber. They're 3-7. Beloit girls are 3-10. That's the first game tonight down in Salina. The boys' game, always interesting rivalry-wise. You can kind of take the records, throw them out the window. Beloit beat Sacred Heart at Sacred Heart last year after being down 9 in the first half. Sacred Heart beat Beloit on free throws with 6 seconds to go earlier in the year last year. So there's always, they're usually pretty close games between Beloit and Sacred Heart, and there's been some amazing Beloit teams over the years, and there's been some amazing Sacred Heart boys teams over the years. So the matchup tonight, Sacred Heart 7-4, and Beloit 9-4. Beloit won 9 in a row until they lost in the Orange Black Classic Championship to 6A Olathe North, who's ranked 6th in 6A. And had the his what was a player of the year. He was one of the best players in 6A last year as a freshman, and that was the Watson kid who played as a sophomore, good player for Olathe North. And so the thing is, you'd ideally like to play Friday instead of Tuesday after playing those three tough opponents: Pine Creek, Colorado, equivalent of a 6A in Kansas. Then you turn around and be undefeated and ranked Colby, and then you lose a tough one there, Olathe North, in the championship. Here's Ryan Eilert, head coach of Beloit, on Sacred Heart and that quick turnaround.
I don't think they're in a midseason tournament, so they've been sitting there all week, you know, ready and prepping for us. And so it is going to be a hard turnaround for us, but hopefully the kids see the big picture and have, you know, have come with the intensity and knowing that we've got to come out and play our best ball if we want to go there and get a win.
Important game for Beloit tonight, because you can get the win, you go to 10-4, you're 4-1 in league play, you then get Friday off so you can recover a little bit, and then you have a very winnable game coming up on Tuesday against Republic County at home, and then you go to Ellsworth, which will be a tough game against Cravens and company. So this is, you know, Beloit could get this win, because you don't want to sit, you lose tonight, and then you got a week in between games to stew on a loss to a rival. So it'd be interesting to see the energy for Beloit coming into this game on the road. Many times, even as a broadcaster myself, after a energetic, fun, exciting 3-day tournament, it's hard even for a broadcaster to get going again when you get in the regular season, especially if the atmosphere in the gym is dead. Like if it's nobody's there, people decide to stay home, whatever the case may be, or the game's lopsided, it's hard to have the energy. So it applies not only to the players and the coaches, it applies to even the media and the fans and the parents, I think, too.
I feel that going into tonight's game for sure after the week I had last week too. So it's now Friday night, there'll not be any issue with me having energy in the gym when I do Lakeside and Osborne.
Yeah.
So that's good.
There.
But it is always like Lincoln Lakeside seems to be the game I usually do out of the break, and it's just like they're not always great matchups and things like that. So I hear you and feel you on that one for sure.
Absolutely. All right, so that's a look at high school basketball for tonight. And as Dusty mentioned, wrestling locker room chats tonight as well. And we'll have Lincoln at Lakeside on Katy Country 94 and Beloit at Sacred Heart on Z96.3 Lake and live video stream at ncksports.com via Beloit Trojan channel. All right, let's shift back to college hoops, where K-State is ranked in the top 5. So we talk about expectations, and you know, when Jerome Tang was hired, and once he started grabbing and getting some really good players, recruiting, and then getting Keontae Johnson and transfer portal and so forth and so on, you know, my thought was Jerome Tang is going to be in the tournament, and I was thinking second round, maybe Sweet 16 if things fell right, but I was thinking I think he can win a game in the tournament. I never really had any doubt that he wouldn't make the tournament. I don't know why. I just felt like this is a guy that knows what he's doing. He's getting good athletes. I saw the talent these kids were that he was bringing in. He kept Noel. Losing Pack, of course, had some people really worried. And they've been just fine without Nigel Pack, obviously. And so, for me, the expectation of the K-State was the ceiling was probably Sweet 16, if you really wanted to dream. Second round, maybe top 5 in the Big 12. And if you get to the top half of the Big 12 in your first year, considering where you were last year, you're really doing something. And I think I may have had higher expectations than a lot of K-State fans, because I actually mentioned Sweet 16 or round of 32. There's some K-State fans who go, I'll just be happy we get into the tournament. Now, what are the expectations? You're ranked 5th in the country. You're 17-2. You're 6-1 in the Big 12. You're now 2 games ahead of KU. actually three, because you have a tiebreaker, beat them head-to-head. You play them again coming up on Tuesday the 31st after KU will have just played Kentucky. Emotional game there on the road, so that might be a good time for K-State to catch KU next Tuesday. And you go to Iowa State tonight, who is one of the teams that's a game behind, along with Texas at 5-2. Baylor's still there at 5-3. K-State, they got a road win at Baylor. KU lost at Baylor. K-State, obviously, held serve at home, haven't lost a home game yet in conference play. If K-State can get this game tonight, you're almost at the halfway point of the Big 12 conference season. You'd be 7-1, and you have road wins at Waco and at Ames and at Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, if K-State wins this game tonight, they got to be the favorite to win this thing.
Yeah, at this point, they have to. I mean, if you can get those wins, it's TCU didn't, you know, TCU's kind of would have been the wild card had they maybe not lost to West Virginia there and kind of put them so that it's just like they're up and down, right?
Yeah,
like
they're but they're really, not out really of it. Good. They have three conferences.
No, they're not out of it, right, but there. We would be talking about them is my right. point of if K-State won tonight and TCU would have won that game with West Virginia and have just two losses and a win over K-State right now, then it wouldn't be quite as big of a favorite if K-State wins tonight, right? And so, yeah, I mean, you win tonight. Dream big, win it at Kansas on next Tuesday, then you're definitely the favorite to win the conference.
Yeah.
But you got to get through tonight first, and this isn't going to be easy. But, yeah, we were talking about this off the air. It's like expectations for everything kind of change when you start winning and start doing great things, and even in the game. Like, it's like I was getting frustrated watching K-State on Saturday because they're so good. You know, last year I was frustrated because they were so bad. It was just like they knew how to, you know, clutch defeat from the jaws of victory last year, right? Like, they were just so good at that last year. This year it's the exact opposite, right? Like, they're coming away with wins in tight situations and, you know, three overtimes, wins in the conference. Everything that adds up to that, and they put themselves in this position where, yeah, your expectation is that they need to be and should be challenging for the Big 12 championship, first of all. And when you get to number five in the country, you're obviously considered a national championship contender at this time of year. And it's still wild for me to say that, but that's where we're at. And, you know, it's anything less than if you do, like you said, if you do the Sweet 16 now and that's where you lose, then people are going to be frustrated and disappointed. And it's like, wait, what?
Right.
We won 14 games last year. Like, what are you mad about if they go to the Sweet 16 this year? But it's just like, it just changes on a dime, and it can change in 2 weeks in a basketball season.
Well, just like at KU, they lost three in a row now.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're sitting there two games behind K-State. Going to the K-State game, they were alone in top of first. So it just, it is amazing. But Iowa State is really good at home. They blew the doors off Texas Tech. They beat Texas. They are very, very good at home. They're a good defensive team. And K-State tonight against Iowa State, 8 o'clock on ESPNU from Hilton Coliseum. Number 11, TCU hosts Oklahoma at 7 o'clock on ESPN+. Number 10, Texas welcomes Oklahoma State to Austin at 8 o'clock tonight. Now, when the new rankings come out, Kansas State, TCU, Texas, Iowa State, and Baylor. Kansas could be the sixth highest rated Big 12 team. I mean, they honestly probably should be. Iowa State, K-State, if Iowa State loses to K-State, I guess they could be behind KU in the rankings. But if TCU takes care of business this week, Texas takes care of business, K-State, you know, honestly, if they go 1-1, I think they're still ranked ahead of KU because KU lost again three in a row. I mean, and KU loses to Kentucky, KU is going to be the sixth highest rated Big 12 team, assuming they're still rated, after losing possibly four in a row. So, and this is after a team that was just ranked second. And UConn, as I said, lost 5 out of 6 after being number 2. I mean, it is amazing how quickly it changes.
That's why I would just, I know it's number 5, and that's, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Kansas State because the way things are going, they might just deserve to be number 5. But also, you got to look at the way things are going. We've had so many teams that are in the top five this year just all of a sudden fall completely out of the rankings and stuff like that. I don't know if we have a good grasp on who's really good this year. Usually, there's a top tier of teams that kind of take a hold of the top five, and your hot teams kind of sneak into the bottom half of the top 10 and then, you know, fall out when they come back to earth a little bit. But this year, it's just been so crazy. You've had top 10 teams that aren't even ranked. You've got teams that started unranked all the way, move all the way up to the top five. I'm not saying K-State isn't a top five team right now, because nobody else has taken hold of that either. But I just want to, you know, they might lose two out of like you said, there's probably a spot where they're going to lose two out of three and they'll get pushed back, and kind of like Kansas has right now. And it's just, I don't know. It's just I don't know if top five is really where you want to set your expectations right now, but, you know.
Well, I'd say why not? Because of the landscape that is. If you're in the best conference in America and you're atop the conference, yeah, you deserve to be top five. In fact, I'd argue K-State should be higher than five. I mean, look at the top five. I mean, I'm pulling it up right here. I want to pull it up to have the exact right rankings because there's so many different rankings that people pull up and put in CBSSports.com's rankings. Okay, this is a weird ranking, too. Oh, this is Andy Katz's top 25. Just give me the AP top 25. That's all I want. Can I get that?
Purdue, Alabama, Houston.
There we go. Finally got it. And they got a countdown backwards. So Purdue's number one. Alabama's two. Alabama is playing really good basketball right now. Houston is three. Tennessee is four. And K-State is five. And Tennessee has one more loss than K-State. See, I could argue that K-State should be ahead of Tennessee. I could argue K-State should be ahead of Houston because K-State's played a tougher schedule in Houston.
Absolutely.
Houston lost to Alabama at home. They lost at home to Temple. Temple's not great. They're okay. Off to a decent start in the AAC. You know, Purdue, I'm not sold that they're all that, even though they got a 7'4 guy that, you know, is taller than everybody. He's going to be possibly the player of the year. I've watched him play. I don't know. I'm not impressed by Zach Edey like a lot of people are. I mean, yeah, you're 7'4". You're supposed to block shots. Congrats. I mean, he doesn't get up and down the floor as well as I think he probably – I think he could dominate is what I think, and he doesn't dominate in my opinion. He's 7'4", and he does really well, but I don't think he's going to be a super great NBA player. So right there, I mean, there's so many teams that you could sit here and say, I mean, Texas is talented enough to be a top five team. TCU, like you said, it's a consistency. They certainly show the flashes of doing it. I mean, there's just no great team this year. So, I mean, if K-State beats – listen, if K-State beats Iowa State on the road and they beat KU on the road Tuesday – in 2 weeks and don't lose, then K-State might be number one in the country.
Yeah.
Seriously.
If those two things happen, yeah,
they probably
I'll
are.
Say, yeah, good.
You
yeah.
Florida in the middle of all that, you got to
right.
beat them too.
I know. If you beat Iowa State, Florida, if you beat Iowa State and Florida, you're probably moving up a spot or two because one of these teams is going to probably lose ahead of you and maybe even jump one or two of them because of the impressive wins you have. It's amazing. I mean, it's so weird because I think KU fans went through this with the football team. Like you said earlier, you couldn't believe that you were saying K-State's fifth in the country. That's what you just said. They were picked 10th in the Big 12 out of 10. That was the preseason pick. They were last, picked 9th or 10th.
The 10th.
Yeah, 9th or 10th. Some had 9th.
Yeah,
Iowa State.
The official ones had 10.
Right, but Iowa State, K-State were 9, 10 in the preseason rankings, and now they're atop the Big 12, first and second. And so K-State's ranked 5th in the country right now, and Iowa State, by the way, is ranked 12th. And you sit here and you say, well, I can't believe I'm saying this. K-State's ranked 5th. What do you think KU football people were saying when KU was 5-0? I can't believe I'm saying KU's 5-0 in football. I can't believe I'm saying KU's ranked in the top 20. I can't believe College Game Day is coming down. Reese Davis, Kirk Herbstreit, and everybody's coming down for TCU and Kansas football. I was there to witness that. I was pinching myself. Like, what in the world is this? This has got to be a dream or a nightmare for people who don't like KU. Like, oh, God, KU's finally got a football team. And now you're sitting here looking at K-State men's basketball like, pinch me. How is this true? So each fan base has gone through this. The only difference is K-State men's basketball, I think, can keep it going for the whole season and be a national championship contender, whereas football, you know, you've really got probably five or six programs that really legitimately got a chance of winning a title. Clearly, a lot of teams in the Big 12 don't have a chance to win a Big 12, or they don't have a chance to win an NCAA title or really make the playoff. TCU did this year, and we saw what happened in the championship game. So you got a better chance of being, I think, at near the top in basketball longer than football. But then again, you never know because the Big 12 is so good in basketball. And it's not bad in football either. Even with Oklahoma, Texas leaving, the Big 12 is not any slouch by any stretch of the imagination. But it is interesting that both fan bases have gone through a similar thing.
Yeah, it's just so fast for K-State. And I know it was fast for KU, but yeah, they literally had a full year before it came, right?
Right.
Like, K-State has not had that, right? This happened, and it happened. Now, I could tell the first time these guys played that Jerome Tang was going to, in the exhibition game I watched, that Jerome Tang had this team playing different and that they're probably going to eventually be a really good team.
Right.
I didn't think it was going to happen this fast.
No.
That in year one, they are literally right now a national championship contender. Now, that could change. Things could get different as the season goes on in the conference. But right now, I mean, I'm seeing videos on YouTube of national people saying, here's why Jerome Tang can win a national title this year.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, that's just I've gotten past the part of the purple glasses, right?
Yeah. No, it's
to where they're now number five in the country and people are actually talking about it.
Well, I mean, you have to admit, I was one of the first people on the wagon here. I came out boldly, and nobody else in the country was coming out, and even K-State fans. I didn't hear a single K-State fan tell me, and this was early in the non-con. I can go back and play the tape. I said, and Max told me that, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, guess what? It happened. I said K-State's going to beat KU at least once. I said at least once. I didn't say just once. I said at least once, which means when I said that, I think there's a chance they could win twice against KU. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not predicting that yet. Maybe I will Tuesday. But at least once. And I had people that heard that comment thought I lost my mind. And I said, I have watched. I know. I'm not a genius by any stretch of imagination. I don't know how to, you know, do brain surgery. I'm not a rocket scientist. But I do know a good basketball team when I see it. And I saw K-State, even when they lost to Butler, I was watching that game. I'm like, dude, this team is just getting started. And I looked at how they could match up against KU. And I'm like, you know, that's going to be a tough game for KU. Because of the athleticism, K-State can play above the rim. And so now it's funny to me watching all the people jump on the wagon and now talking about winning a national title and being a Final Four team and Jerome Tang's amazing. And I'm sitting there going, dude, called this shot about 2 months ago as to thinking that they're good enough to beat Kansas, which, of course, when you say they're going to beat Kansas at least once, you're saying they're going to the tournament. You're saying they're going to be a threat in the Big 12. And it all comes with it. And now they're sitting alone atop the Big 12, not quite, but almost to the halfway mark. And so now people, of course, jump on the wagon. Even the fair-weather K-State fans jumping on the wagon. Even those K-State fans that have been hiding in the closet during basketball season, just like KU fans hid in the closet during football, all of a sudden come out of the woodwork acting like they're experts on basketball now and still don't know how much is on a shot clock, whether it's a half or quarters, and don't even know if it's a 10-second violation. But they know everything now because their basketball team or their school, they are suddenly good. Just like KU fans suddenly act like, we want Bama and we think we're so good at football. Yeah, hold on a second. You beat Duke. You beat Houston. You beat West Virginia. Those are nice wins. Let's see what you do against TCU, who they almost beat. So there is going to be a time where K-State's going to struggle and probably lose 2 out of 3 and fall back. But I don't think they're going to fall back that far. And I think they're only going to get better. And you bring in Gasan back into the fray, this K-State team is extremely dangerous. And we were talking about this well before the national people finally got wind of it. Because the national people are always last to the party when it comes to the things in the Midwest. Well,
for sure.
In the Midwest. Yeah. Just how
and especially if it's a team like K-State that's not known to be up there in the recent past.
Exactly. Shift to the Royals. The Royals have traded outfielder Michael A. Taylor to the Twins for left-handed pitcher Evan Sisk and right-handed pitcher Steven Cruz. Taylor hit .249, 21 homers over the course of two seasons, won a Gold Glove at center field for the Royals in 2021. They get Sisk, who is a 25-year-old lefty reliever the Twins got from the Cardinals in a trade. He had an ERA of 1.57, 76 strikeouts and 63 innings in the upper minors as a reliever. So that's interesting. He's only 25. Cruz is a 23-year-old righty, ERA over 5, but struck out 72 and 56 innings at AA. So Sisk has been assigned to AAA Omaha. Cruz is heading to AA Northwest Arkansas. Listen, I love this move. There's no reason for Michael A. Taylor to be on the Royals right now. The Royals are not going to be a playoff team. Michael A. Taylor's making $4.5 million, which isn't a ton in today's means of baseball. But to me, Drew Waters should be your center fielder as long as he can continue to swing the bat. Although there's another, they might have a couple candidates for center field, and that's fine. You know, Isabel played good center last year, too. There's no need for Michael A. Taylor to hold somebody back. And I think what J.J. Piccolo was saying is, listen, we think we've got guys ready to take over that role in center. We can go get a couple of young relievers, one, a lefty that actually has power stuff that could help our bullpen. And you know how much money these two guys are going to cost? $600,000 or $700,000 compared to 4.5 for Michael A. Taylor. And Taylor's a really good gold glove center fielder, but Drew Waters, I think, is an outstanding defensive player as well. And Taylor wasn't exactly hitting the cover off the ball with the Royals. Never has been a great hitter for average. He has a little bit of pop. He has good base running speed, but so does Drew Waters. So why not go with a cheaper guy in center and allow him to establish himself and get the plate appearances he needs to see if he's an answer for this team at the major league level? And then Michael Taylor, which, you know, I think they tried to trade him last year at the deadline, and they just didn't get enough for him. And they held on to him, and now they got this deal, and they trade him within division to the Twins. I personally like the deal.
I think the Twins, with some of the moves they made, bringing back Carrera and the trade they just made with the Marlins to get a pitcher, they're going to contend, or they're going to try to contend. And then Michael Taylor fits better with a contending team in a smaller role, to take on a contending team, a defensive.
He'll be a fourth outfielder, and Buxton always gets hurt in center, mm-hmm. So then he's your guy to replace Buxton when he gets hurt.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good move. I think it's a good move for both.
Yeah.
Listen, we were talking about at the end of last year, and anytime you bring up the Royals, there's just a logjam in the outfield, mm-hmm. And if you can get rid of one of those guys and feel comfortable about it, get rid of guy that is the veteran, right, that's going to cost you more money, if you feel like other guys can step in and play that role. So there's no question. I think it's an easy trade to make if you feel confident about what you've got in the outfield and don't want that logjam, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
You're just trying to figure out who's going to play where. I mean, it was just nerve wracking to try to figure out who's going where with this. Like, who's playing what position, when and where with this team?
Well,
and so you've opened up at least a spot to where you mm-hmm. figure out where MJ Melendez is going to play or whatever, but it's if you feel like Drew Waters is your guy and he's ready, this is the time to do it.
Well, I think you go for it, and so I like it. I was kind of disappointed when they didn't trade him last year at the deadline.
Yeah.
But nothing against Michael A. Taylor, just not part of the future of this team. But then the Royals are signing Aroldis Chapman. Rumor is that Chapman's coming into the fray, which I don't quite get that one. But anyway. One thing makes sense, one thing doesn't with the Royals. Or two things don't make sense, one thing makes sense. It is what it is. The Chiefs officially now are an underdog. Yeah, I said this yesterday on the show. The longer the week goes, the line will move. People will be concerned about Mahomes' injury. The Bengals should be the favorite. They're the better team. That does not mean the Chiefs can't win on Sunday. You know, I know we talked about all this stuff yesterday, and I was Debbie Downer for Chiefs fans, but Dusty and I were talking about this after the show yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about expectations. Think about this for a second. If this, like, we were guilty of it yesterday, and I'm sure a lot of Chiefs fans are guilty of it. You just immediately turn the page. You beat the Jaguars at home in a playoff game, and you're like, big deal, we do that now. It's like Mahomes has 9 playoff wins at home at Arrowhead. It's just what we do. We're in the AFC title game every year. It's like no big deal. But think about it. Rewind the time machine back 5 years. The first divisional playoff game that Patrick Mahomes played in was the Colts. And he got dinged up in that game. And the Chiefs beat the Colts. And we were going crazy. Oh, my God! The Chiefs are going to the AFC title game! Woo! 5 years later. I don't think they can beat the Bengals. Why don't we enjoy the win against Jacksonville? Because it's in the rearview mirror. We don't. Our goal wasn't just to win a divisional round playoff game. Whereas when you've gone so many years with all the heartache of great teams losing at Arrowhead and choking, the Lynn Elliott game, the Gerbach playing when he shouldn't have been, Rich Gannon should have been starting a quarterback, the penalty against Gonzalez that wasn't called by the Broncos. It could go on and on about all the bad things that happened. The no punt game. I can go on and on about how bad the Chiefs were at home with great teams. But then all of a sudden, you beat the Colts in a divisional playoff game. You're like, whoa, because we were worried about that game, weren't we? The Colts always have our number. And all of a sudden, it was Mahomes' magic. And then the Chiefs just, you know, rolled, right? They lose to the Patriots in the AFC title game. But then the next year, of course, they are down 24-0. Big deal. Beat the Texans. Down 10 against the Titans. Big deal. Win. Go to the Super Bowl. Oh, hey, what do you know? We're down by 10 to the 49ers. Big deal. We'll just go ahead and torch him on a 3rd and 15 with a wasp play to get back in the game. Next year, we'll just steamroll everybody, go 14-1. We'll rest the last week of the season because we don't have to do anything against the Chargers. And then we'll go ahead and we'll take care of the, the Bills is who they beat in the AFC title game. They beat them pretty easily, actually. And then they go to the Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden, boom, everything changed because you got beat by the Buccaneers and Tom Brady and so forth and so on. But the point is the expectations. 5 years ago, we would have been going nuts that the Chiefs had just beaten Jacksonville in the divisional round game to go to the AFC title game and be hosting at Arrowhead. And we'd be tickled pink if the Chiefs were whether underdog or not. We wouldn't even care. We'd be like, we're happy to be here. We're one win away from the Super Bowl. 5 years later, we're sitting here like we were yesterday, and we are right now going, you know, it'd be pretty bad if they lose their fifth. They'll lose the fifth straight AFC title game they host. It'd be really bad. They'd be 2-3 after five straight AFC title games. It'd be really bad if they only go to two Super Bowls and only win one. 5 years ago, we're like, we just want to win a damn playoff game at home. And we did, and we're going nuts. And 5 years later, we beat the Jaguars, who are probably more talented than that Colts team was that year. And we're sitting there going, whatever.
Somebody in between that woke up from a coma. We went to two Super Bowls? We made two of them.
Five straight AFC title games?
And you got to,
it's the expectations.
Another thing is you got to look at it this way. You got Mahomes that's dinged up, and you're just barely an underdog.
Right?
I said this yesterday. I don't know how it was supposed to feel great yesterday. You know, with Mahomes just coming off the injury, Cincinnati looking so great, it probably wasn't supposed to feel great yesterday. Mm-hmm. Now I think the fact that the underdog thing or the line has changed, and now the underdog thing has changed. I think you might start to feel better once it comes Friday, Saturday, if they can use that as some little motivation.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that because I've been talking with one of my friends who listens to the podcast, and we were texting back and forth. And he said, you know, you make a really good point listening to your show yesterday that this could be a blessing in disguise because Andy might actually have to run the ball. And the other thing is, and they threw it out there on ESPN last night, that Patrick Mahomes, when he stays in the pocket, he's the number one rated passer in the NFL, and he leads like six different categories, including touchdown passes, QBR, when he stays in the pocket. Like, everybody gets caught up in, he makes such unbelievable plays when he scrambles 10 yards to his right, and he does. But that's one thing I've been trying to preach for a long time is if Mahomes would stay in the pocket a little bit longer, and I know we're nitpicking here, but if he'd stay in the pocket a little bit longer and not scramble so early sometimes, I think there are big plays that he misses. And I see it a lot when he gets a little bit of pressure coming up the middle that he a lot of quarterbacks will step up, and sometimes they'll take that shot, and they'll deliver a pass. And I'm not saying Mahomes should step up, take that shot, and get hurt. I'm not saying that at all. But there are times when I think he thinks there's pressure there that isn't, and then his mechanics are horrible. I'll think of a drive out in Denver late in the first half where he just felt pressure wasn't there, and he didn't use his feet, and he one-hops the receiver like twice in a row, similar plays, and if he just actually steps into the pass, it's an easy completion. And so maybe it's a blessing in disguise that Mahomes might not be as mobile as he normally is. Now, you might say he's more of a sitting duck, and I would listen to that argument. But to get to Jason's point, I see the video of Eli Apple, who's really good at shooting his mouth off, but got torched in the Super Bowl. And I see Mike Hilton talking about we're going to Burrowhead. You don't think the Chiefs see that video and know what all it's about? You don't think the Chiefs are tired of hearing about the Bengals are better than them? You don't think they're tired of hearing about how the Bengals are 3-0 and Mahomes has never beaten Burrow? I guarantee you they're tired of it. And the thing is, and that's where people start jumping on the wagon. Well, see, the Chiefs are going to win. They're going to use this as motivation, chip on their shoulder, and they're going to go out and they're going to beat the Bengals on Sunday night. They might even dominate. And I'll say this. Well, guess what? When the Chiefs went into Cincinnati, they felt the same exact way and still lost. The Chiefs went into Cincinnati. You saw how competitive he was in that game. He took a big-time shot trying to score a touchdown. He played it like it was a playoff game. The Chiefs wanted to win that game so badly. Kelce had a fumble. They settled for a 55-yard field goal. They lost the game, and they wanted that game as much or more than the Bengals that day, and they didn't win. So why does it mean because they want it more, they're going to win on Sunday night? You still got to. Like, all of the billboard material is nice, all right? And I do think it'll help the Chiefs a little bit for the Bengals coming in cocky and arrogant, but I think they also know that they can back it up, and I think they also know that if it's a tight game, the Chiefs are going to start wondering about themselves a little bit, because the Chiefs tend to make a mistake where the Bengals don't. Three games the Chiefs lost against the Bengals, there are a few mistakes or one play they didn't make, and that easily could change on Sunday. But here's my point, is I'm with Jason. I think as you get closer to the end of the week, you start to feel maybe a little bit better because you like this chip on the shoulder. You like that the Chiefs are the underdog and they're at home. And, you know, the first four AFC title games, the Chiefs have been the favorite. They will, right now, it looks like they'll be the underdog. You like to see the motivating video of, you know, the Bengals being cocky and saying things like, oh, we're going to Burrowhead. But once you get on that field and you play, that don't mean nothing.
None of it means anything.
It means nothing. That's like the fans going nuts. It doesn't mean anything unless the fans are so loud that Burrow and the offensive line have false starts. It only matters if somebody doesn't hear an audible call and then fumble the ball like the Chargers wide receiver did on a jet sweep on a 3rd-and-1. That's the only effect the crowd has, is if they can be loud enough to where it messes up the Bengals on a play or two. And I don't think it will. I think at the end of the day, it's two really good football teams playing each other, and the Bengals are the more complete team. And the team that makes the least amount of mistakes is probably going to win. And the team, the last three times they've played each other, the team that's made the most mistakes has been the Chiefs. Now, there are people sitting here, and I see all the Chiefs fans jumping on the wagon in regards to, well, you know, we lost all those games. The Bengals didn't win them. We lost them. We made mistakes. Well, you know, the other team forced you into a lot of those mistakes, by the way. And, oh, yeah, it's always convenient to sit here and say, well, the Chiefs didn't do this. The Chiefs didn't do that. And if Kelce would have not fumbled, we would have won last game. And if we got that play before halftime in the AFC title game, we would have blown them out. And, you know, if Butker makes a 55-yarder, we would have won this game. And if Spags doesn't blitz on a 3rd-and-18 and Cincy last year, we don't get burned, and they don't. If the Bengals, the last game, had a touchdown callback due to a penalty and lost 4 points off the scoreboard. The Bengals, late in the first half, on a 4th-and-1, didn't go for 3 points. They went for it and got stuffed on a great play by the Chiefs defense. I think it was Dunlap, the former Bengal, that made the play. Mm-hmm. The Bengals left at least 7 points, if not 10 points, on the field the last time they played and still won. But nobody talks about that because Chiefs have their red glasses on and they don't remember that it's always the Chiefs that make the mistakes. The Chiefs are the ones that beat themselves. And I do believe that. I've said this many times. The Chiefs are their worst own enemy. Many times they beat themselves. Listen, the Kelce fumble wasn't Kelce coughing it up. That was a defensive player that ripped it out with all his might. Okay? Me and Dusty and Jason all together could be hugging onto the ball, and we wouldn't have held onto that one. So they made a play. That's a defensive player making a play, okay? They made plays last year to where Mahomes didn't even score a touchdown in the second half or overtime in an AFC title game. They made enough plays, confused the Chiefs, whatever the case may be. If you think the Chiefs beat themselves because Mahomes got scared and he didn't want to throw the ball, yeah, that could be part of the equation, but the Bengals had something to do with that. So when they play on Sunday night, as we go later into this week, I probably will feel a little bit better about the Chiefs' chances going into the game. And I know people are going to talk about the billboard material, and that gets the fans all riled up. And that might get you the huge, great pep talk in the tunnel before you go out there for the football field. And if the Bengals go down and score on their first drive, does any of the billboard material mean anything?
No.
Nothing. It means nothing. You don't think the Bills were pumped up, ready to go the other day, and the Bengals were up 14-0 before? Listen, the Bengals went down and scored in 4 minutes a touchdown. The Bills then went 3-and-out. Bengals got it back, went and scored a touchdown again, and then it was the Bills were playing from behind the whole game after that. It was an uphill climb because put a lot of pressure on their defense, put a lot of pressure on their offense. Now we got to score every time because this is the Bengals shortened the game. listen, you can sit here and you can talk about all the things the Chiefs have done wrong against the Bengals last three times. You can ignore that the Bengals actually beat the Chiefs three times. You can do all of those things. You can do it. You can say, well, it's at Arrowhead and we just let that one get away last year. This game's not at Cincinnati, so we're gonna be better off. That's all may be true. But at the end of the day, these two teams got to play each other on the field. The fans are not going to determine who wins this game. It's not, they're not. Okay? Yeah. The guys on the field are going to determine who wins the game. And on the field, right now, the best team in football is the Cincinnati Bengals. They've won 10 in a row. They have beaten the Chiefs during that stretch. They've beaten the Bills during that stretch. They've beaten the Ravens multiple times. They're no slouch. They've beaten good teams. They're legitimate. They're a complete team. And that's why I'm worried about Sunday. Do I think the Chiefs can't win? No. I think they can win. But they're going to have to play their best game of the year to win. And if you're an AFC title game, isn't that what you're supposed to do? You have to play your best in order to get to the Super Bowl. You should have to play your best to get to the Super Bowl. So I love the video of Eli Apple talking about Burrowhead. I like Mahomes commenting when people are picking against the Chiefs. Somebody put out there that the Chiefs are going to get beat 34-17, and the Chiefs are going to be dominated. Mahomes, nobody comes back and plays well with a high ankle sprain like that within a week. And Mahomes actually saw that, responded, and put, laugh out loud. And somebody goes, yeah, Mahomes is okay. No, I love that. I want Mahomes to be motivated. How could you not already? I like that. But guess what? They were motivated before against Bengals back in, well, when they played, November, December, whatever it was. They were all ready to go against, it was December 4th. That was only a month and a half ago. The Chiefs are super highly motivated to beat the Bengals in that game. And Mahomes was highly pumped up and twirling and dumping in the end zone, taking shots to his body. And they still lost. So why is this different? Oh, I get it. The game's at Arrowhead. Well, yeah, because the Bengals have never beaten the Chiefs at Arrowhead before.
No,
So I still have reservations, but I do agree with Jason's point. I think a little bit longer, as you go a little further in the week, you maybe start feeling a little bit better about the Chiefs' chances. But the billboard material, it's fun for the fans. It's exciting. It may help the Chiefs get out to a 10-0 lead. Well, does that seem safe after you blew an 18-point lead last year? Of course not.
None of it. Billboard material's fun. I don't think it's ever the reason a team wins.
I don't either.
I don't buy into that. Like, because people will be like, oh, he shouldn't have said this earlier this week. It pumped this guy up. Yeah, there's 21 other guys on the field.
Right.
If you said something about, if Carlos Dunlap said something about some offensive lineman for the Bengals and pumped him up or whatever, if we said something about Joe Burrow doesn't have it and he goes out there and throws for 350 yards and four touchdowns, like, I think that's just Joe Burrow did what he was supposed to do. Maybe he had a chip on his shoulder, maybe you add to it. Now, if you can put the collective chip on a team's shoulder.
And that's what the Bengals did
now,
going to Buffalo. We shouldn't have to play here. We're going to ruin it for the league. And that's the whole refund comment afterwards, which was, I think, hilarious and right. I think you're right, collectively.
It's got to be, and it's whatever Kirby Smart did with Georgia, right? It's put the collective chip on their shoulder. It's now, we're an underdog now. The whole team's an underdog. Nobody said anything about that bulletin board-wise.
Right.
It's a fact that the Chiefs are now an underdog in this game. It's a fact that 63% of people were voting for the Bengals to win on an NFL poll in this game over the weekend. All that stuff is there, and that motivates an entire team. That's not just motivating, you know, Trent McDuffie because somebody said he's a terrible defender. He can't go one on one with Jamar Chase. Just can't do it. He's just a scrub. If somebody said that about Trent McDuffie, well, that affects him, but it doesn't affect the whole team.
Right.
It's also how you use that chip. It's Mahomes, instead of going in the cold tub three times, is he going to go in that fourth time to get that ankle ready to go? Is Trent McDuffie or whoever going to spend another 15 minutes in the film room trying to figure out the patterns that the Bengals run and stuff like that? It's how you use that chip. You can't just say, on Tuesday, I have a chip on my shoulder, and then just expect Sunday to come out and play better. No, you have to use that, and you have to use it wisely.
Well, look at the Chiefs' offensive line. Yeah. Tampa Bay said stuff. It galvanized the Chiefs' offensive line, and that was one of the best games they played all year. Now, the question is, why don't you do that each week? You know, why does it take some guy shooting his mouth off to motivate you more against the Buccaneers. You should already be motivated. They beat you in the Super Bowl a few years back. You know, to me, if the Chiefs need Eli Apple to talk about Burrowhead, or they need some Bengal to say something, then I'm worried as heck about the Chiefs. Because if you aren't already super motivated to beat this team that beat you three times in a row, and who cares if it's three times in a row? The fact they beat you last year is all you need for motivation. They beat you when you were up 18. You want to prove that that was a fluke, that you had a fluky, horrible second half from your star quarterback. That's what you want to prove. That's all the motivation you should need. You shouldn't need any more motivation than that. And if you do, then I'm really concerned about the Chiefs.
Well, I mean, it's just that little extra. It's not. You should be ready to go just because it's the AFC Championship.
You're one step away from the Super Bowl. You should be ready.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of using it the right way. You know, don't just say you're fired up because somebody said something about you on a billboard. It's about using that extra 15 minutes a day in the film room or whatever it is.